Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
TV, my name's Craig. It's 9 o'clock, which means it's time for A Talk Magic. And I'm here with a bit of a legend in the UK magic community. People that watch from further afield might not have heard of this person, but he is one of the busiest working professional magicians in the UK. He's had a huge impact on the magic community for a very, very long time. And he's also one of the smartest. I talk on this channel all the time about the business of magic. He's one of the smartest business people when it comes to running magic as a business that I've ever seen. I've been wanting to get him on the channel for 6 months. We finally managed to get our schedules to mesh, and this interview is going to be amazing. I am, of course, talking about Ginger Magic himself, the one and only Damien Sir. How you doing, man? You okay?
Hi, Craig. Yeah, good to see you.
Thank you so much for coming on here. I know how busy you are.
Nice that you've said that people outside of the UK wouldn't have heard of me, when everyone in the UK thinking, well, I've never heard of him either.
I'll tell you, most professional magicians in the UK will have heard of you. You're the guy that's getting the gigs that they're not. You know, you're the guy that's ranking above everyone. It's like, damn that Ginger Magic. So yeah, a lot of people have heard of you. But you're such a, you know, a great magician. You've been in magic for a very long time. Like I said, you're a very smart business person. We're going to talk all about that. But obviously, over the years, you've actually created and released products as well, specifically to, you know, and we'll talk about that. But you've done so much and you continue to be really, really successful. You're one of those people that was successful through lockdown. You've bounced back really strong now. You know, you're a real inspiration. So it's great to have you on the channel.
I don't know what to say.
Well, you know what? There are going to be some people that haven't heard of you. And like I say, you are one of the best kept secrets in magic. So let's start at the very beginning. And if we can do kind of, I like to call this the origin story. And we'll just give people a bit of backstory as to you. It feels like you've been in magic forever. And everyone I spoke to and I speak to knows you. But when did you get into magic? When did all that begin?
Yeah, I always find it interesting when you ask other people, other magicians, this question, because most, it feels like lots of people got into it relatively late, I find. But I used to think that I got into it when I was 10 or 12, but I was cleaning out my mom's loft a few years ago, and she kept this book of what your kids are doing through the years and sort of stuff. So when I was 6, apparently, I wanted to be either a magician or a footballer. And I've got no interest in football, so I've got no idea what that's about. But the magic stuck. So I had a kind of kid phase of it. My dad showed me my first ever trick. And I remember going to an outdoor market with my parents once in, I don't know where it was, but there was a guy doing a spandex routine, and that was just like the most ridiculous thing. So I bought those, got obsessed with that sort of stuff. But everything, the real starting point was when I was 13 and I walked into the magic shop in Sheffield, and that's still one of the best. Well, it's one of my favorite. It's like, what if whenever I go back there, it's like walking into the, you know, remember the old TV series Cheers? You just walk in, it's like everyone knows you, and it's such an amazing place. So yeah, Russell Hall has been running that for donkey's years, and then you spoke to Matt Johnson a few weeks ago, he started there as well. And yeah, the likes of Roger Curzon and Les Johnson kind of really took me under their wing. And literally from being 13 to kind of early 20s, I probably missed a handful of Saturdays. It was just like, some people go to church. I went there to just absorb this knowledge from these amazing guys.
With everything that's gone on online these days, and Facebook groups and Discord servers and so on and so forth, that's less of a thing these days, isn't it? Like going to the magic shop and hanging out there all day. And obviously there's less brick and mortar magic shops now than ever before.
Yeah.
Do you think it's like, looking back at that period of time in your life, do you think it's important for people new into magic, younger people especially, to find somewhere where they can kind of hang out and be around other like-minded people?
So my gut feeling on that is yes, but I'm also, I kind of counter that by thinking, I think kids TV, if I look at kids TV now and kids TV when I was a kid, it's never as good as it was. It's like, so I think it's kind of a, whenever I think, oh, people don't have the magic shops like they used to and stuff, it's all YouTube. And it's probably when they're our age, they'll be thinking, well, the new generation don't have YouTube because it's been replaced wherever it is. It's just a side effect of us or me aging to think it's not as good for them as it was for us. But that said, like that magic shop completely shaped my life in terms of both magic and politics. And I've got lifelong friends, like most of my school friends I'm not in touch with anymore, but I've got lifelong friends from the magic shop that I see as often as I can.
That's amazing. Because you're not based in Sheffield anymore, are you?
No, so I try and get back there whenever I can. But I'm in Somerset now, in a tiny little town called Axbridge in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. So at what point, so you're going to this magic shop and you're hanging around magicians and the bug has firmly bitten.
Yeah.
And that was kind of from the age of 12, 11, 12, 13.
Yeah.
What was your goal? Was this just like, oh, this is a really fun hobby, I'm enjoying doing this, I'm enjoying practicing? Or did you aspire to become a professional magician and kind of think, well, you know what, maybe I can make money out of this?
So during those teenage years, it was just obsession with, so I was like lots of magicians, I was a very shy kid, and it was just I just got obsessed with the almost the juggling side of it. So that it's just when you see someone like Leonard Green do, so Leonard Green wasted 5 years of my life because I had to try and achieve what he could do. It's like almost a futile, because he's so amazing, but just trying to, before he even released the videos and how to do the stuff, we were all just obsessed with trying to deconstruct how the hell he was doing it and then trying to learn it. And so we'd all kind of come back to the magic shop next Saturday and we've got a new, maybe he's doing this. So it was just a group of friends who liked each other with a shared passion, and that's all it ever was. And then in my late teens, so at school, when they start asking you about work experience and what you want to do and stuff, that coincided with me getting into, Bill Hicks, the comedian.
Yep.
So I got really into Bill Hicks and Noam Chomsky. And so when adults started asking me what I wanted to do for a living, I just got this really stubborn opinion that I didn't want to work. And why do people work? And that doesn't feel like most, I had the impression in my head that most people do jobs that they don't enjoy for most of their lives. And then they retire when they're ill and then they die. And that didn't sound like such a good path.
So you're probably not 1,000,000% wrong with that. There are a lot of people out there that do jobs they hate.
Yeah. So I'd made this kind of silly decision that I wasn't going to work for a living. But obviously income needs to come from somewhere. So I decided that I was going to do my hobbies for money. And it was literally at that point, like I never thought that I was going to be a magician before that point. And the two hobbies that I had were magic and computer animation. And I just alternated those throughout the next kind of 10, 15 years.
Wow.
I've not done animation for about 15 years now.
So initially, when you had the desire to become, when you decided, hey, I'm going to become a magician, there was also that computer animation side of things as well. So did you go to university to do that, or was it kind of more of a self-taught thing?
Yeah, so with the animation side of things, so I did a foundation course in art I was going to go to university next, and animation was really new at this point. Well, animation is obviously not new. Computer animation was relatively new. So Toy Story didn't exist or anything yet. That was just, there'd been a few short films. So there weren't many animation courses around. So I was advised to do graphic design. And then when I went to the graphic design interview, I think it was in Leeds, they made it clear that they didn't really do computer animation. So I decided to have a year out to do magic. And I thought I'll go to university the next year. That year out turned into a fairly successful year for someone who's just living at home. You don't need much money, do you, when you're living with your parents? So magic kind of took off, but I still really loved the animation side of things. So when I first left home and went to live with some friends for a few years, got really into it. So I'd spend my evenings, got obsessed with Doom 2. We played these computer games just around the
clock. Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
So I'd spend my evenings playing Doom and my days kind of teaching myself to animate.
Wow.
Bought some books on, there's massive books. It's called 3D Studio, this software that I used to use. And so learned myself to animate, did a short film called The Dreamer, which I just wanted. So all my friends thought it was a really good little animation, but friends are just nice, aren't they? So I wanted to see what real people thought of it. So I sent it off to an animation company in, they were near Birmingham, and they got me in and offered me a job. And I was literally like, I don't want a job. I just want to know what you think of it. but they offered me a job, and it was the sort of money that you can't refuse. So I ended up I did that for a few years, and then I moved on to the next project. So that's how the animation kind of journey started.
Wow. And I suppose the question I've got, I get asked this on the channel all the time. When is the right time to go professional? A lot of people that are hobbyists and amateurs, they want to eventually become semi-pro or pro. I mean, you've had a very different kind of, you went from school and you were like, you know what, I'm going to become a full-time professional magician. You had this thing going on in the background as well. Any advice on people going pro? And I suppose a follow-up question to that is, at what point did you decide to ditch the computer animation? And just because you said you haven't done it in 15 years, what made you decide to kind of go, right, okay, now I'm going to go full-time magic?
Yeah. So in terms of the when to do it, it's going to different for different people. But for most people, I would say as soon as you're thinking that, give it a go. Because things are only, it's a bit like when people say, if you're trying to think, when's the best time to have a kid? There's never going to be a time where you think, right, everything's in place, we can now add a child to this mix. It's just, that's not how life works. So you're gonna you do it when either it crops up or time's roughly right. So if you're thinking about trying to do magic, either semi-professionally or full-time, if you've already got a house and kids and mortgage, then you really need to work out if it is the right time or not. But for lots of people, if you're living at home or you've got a job and you don't really need the money, they're the perfect two scenarios where just go for it, because who cares if it doesn't work? You need very little money from it. If you've got the mortgage and bills to pay, you obviously need to inch towards it. You can't just, well, maybe you can. So Tony Robbins might say that you should just ditch the job and burn the boat, and it's all or nothing. I suppose that might be the right thing to do for some people, not for others.
Yeah. Okay.
Part B. Oh, the animation thing. So, yeah, I was properly obsessed by animation. I used to love it. And ironically, it's the closest. So the two things that I loved doing at that point were skiing and animating, and they sound like the most completely opposite things. One's kind of complete slow motion, the other one's, so I used to do ski seasons in the winter and animate in the summer, and animate the rest of the year. But I was really into kind of quality with animation, so I'd just be obsessed about beautiful moves. But the work I was doing was in kids TV. So with kids TV, you're just producing kind of 10 seconds of animation a week. Whereas if you're working for Pixar, you're doing kind of a second or a second and a half per week. And I wanted to be doing that. I don't just want to be waving like this. I want to be doing all the beautiful character stuff. So I was trying to fit that into my animation day where I'm doing 10 seconds a day, and it just kind of burnt me out. It just kind of producing crap to put through the door, which I completely understand. It's like the budgets for kids TV compared to the budgets for films, it's a different ballpark, but I want to work in the films. So I applied for Pixar 3 times, but didn't get in. I nearly got a job with Blue Sky Studios, who did Ice Age and all those sort of films. But yeah, I just got burnt out from kids TV and stopped enjoying it. And that just turned into taking the magic much more seriously and then never looking back, really.
That's great. That's awesome. And do you kind of look back and go, do you still keep your hand in, or is it just like, okay, that was a period of my life that's done?
So probably for the first 5 years or so, I kind of used to enjoy it because every couple of years, someone would, do you want to work on this? And I'd do a bit. That was nice. And part of me would still like to do that, but I certainly don't chase it anymore. And my friends have stopped asking, basically. I've still got lots of animation friends, but they're all kind of doing it day in, day out. And obviously you get, even the tools that they grow, everything's developing so quickly. So you'd almost be learning from scratch. All the technical things will be the same, but the software will be completely different. So
yeah,
I miss it. But I don't miss the kids TV kind of. It was nice. It was lovely seeing stuff on TV that you've worked on, but I don't miss the output. I miss working in a team was really nice because I'm not much of a team player generally. I'm kind of much more in my head and do things my own way. So that was nice, and made some great friends. But yeah, it feels like a distant thing now. But I love watching, and so the different, even now, so there's loads of companies now doing animation, but if you watch a Pixar film compared to most other films, the arcs that they do, it's just a beautiful, beautiful thing. And it's nice to have been an animator to be able to appreciate the level of finesse that
you must look at something like a Pixar film in a completely different way to most people.
It's a beautiful thing. Like we watched, because it's been Halloween, we watched Coco again the other night, and it's just phenomenal. There's good animation, excellent animation. It's like, and then it's like, what the hell have you just done? It's just beautiful. I watched this is completely nothing to do with magic, is it?
Oh, it's fine.
There was a documentary on Finding Nemo, and the director was directing one of the animators, and I've got no idea what the line was, but Dory delivered this line, and it was just lovely. The animator worked on it for like a week, so they're watching like the preview, and the director, so I'm watching this scene thinking that's just beautiful animation, and the director said try raising the eyebrow and squinting the other eye, just did this minute change and then played it again. And it's like, how the hell could you see that perfect bit of animation needed that? It's just, anyway, we're way off magic, but it's just beautiful.
No, that's fine. I see that you're really passionate about this, and that's what these interviews are all about. It's really nice to, you know, to see that. And, you know, I know nothing about computer animation myself, but I can imagine how hard it is, you know, like, spending a week to do like this 1 3-second thing. I mean, it just shows the amount of work that must go into these films.
Yeah, crazy.
Now, circling back to magic. So you've been a working magician your entire life, pretty much on or off, whether it be doing it with something else or 15 years ago, just basically doing it full time. And I want to talk about the business of magic in a bit, but before we do, I mentioned in my introduction to you that you've developed some products in the past in a particular genre, and they were apps. And you bought a couple of apps out back in the day before apps were like really popular. Like now, apps are like king in magic. You know, there's a new app coming out like literally every day. We've just had Cognito out by Lloyd Barnes, and there's new apps coming out all the time. But when you release these two apps, which are amazing, by the way, I think there's two that you bought out, wasn't there? Three. Yeah. When you bought these out, there wasn't really many other options out there. You were one of the pioneers of the app market in magic. So I suppose the question is, what made you, you're a magician, you're going out gigging. What made you decide to develop these apps? And I know that they were successful. What made you then decide to stop developing apps and kind of move away? Because I know you could probably develop more if you wanted to.
Yeah. So the first one that I did was Card Now, which is the I still use it constantly. But the reason I didn't even release it for magic reasons. So obviously I'm a magician. When I was doing a bit of business networking, I'm not a networker by any means, but when I was doing that, I invented the app for business networking. I always thought it would be too silly for a magician to use because it's just obvious you're taking a card from under the phone. It's that, how can that be impressive? But I thought it would be a really cute thing for someone who doesn't do magic to just give their business card out at a networking event. So I literally just created it for that reason. And then when it was finished, I can't code. So I worked with Jacob Halskov, who's a fantastic coder. He'd done card to phone. So he'd already got kind of half the code there, and then we worked on it. So when it was, when we first had the prototype, I tried it at a gig. And literally the first time that I did it, I got kind of the David Blaine reaction, this guy running off to tell his friends to come and look. And I was completely shocked. I thought this was a silly little thing that's just for non-magicians to hand out a card in an interesting way.
But I'd just like to say, amazing. I love this app. I still do it to this day.
Yeah.
I bet a lot of magicians don't know what we're even talking about because it's so old, still available. Yeah. Basically, the whole idea is when somebody asks for a business card, you show your phone, and it looks like you're printing your business card inside your phone, and then you can just literally pull it out and give it them. It's incredible.
Yeah. And it's, just like you, I do it multiple times every gig, get great reactions from it. It gets a business card in someone else's hand. That ticks a lot of boxes. So that was successful and got really good reviews. So then I had this other idea for an augmented reality app that was way, way more complicated than I thought it was going to be. But worked with another developer on that. I actually did
I love that. I had my business cards printed up with the graphics on the back of it because I loved it so much. It's great.
So that one was, that's probably been the most frustrating one that I did because we worked really hard on that. I actually did a trade show for a app company in exchange for working on the app to get it released. And we got this fantastic app and back in the day, it really fooled magicians as well because there was the input methods on it were, there were some very clever input methods that there was just nothing to be seen. And that was great. I was really proud of that. And then Apple just changed some things to do with their AR code. So it no longer worked. So we had to decide to either start building it from scratch and then charge people for it again, or we were in a position. It was just a tricky position that was through no fault of our own. Apple just changed something, which obviously everything had to do, it's their system. So that one just got shelved. There were a few false starts with it. That got shelved. Then I created Sure Thumper, which is a thumping app.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, that's quite cute. I keep wanting to come back to the AR mind reader and refresh it, but it's just a matter of where you put your focus, isn't it? There's not. I know you spoke to Mark Kirsten a few months ago. He's obviously, he creates some amazing apps. But because I'm not a coder, I found it really difficult to, most coders who are any good are very busy. So you've either got to invest a lot of money to, so like for Card Now, lots of people wanted an Android version. So I tried to do a Kickstarter to fund an Android version. So I don't use Android, so I literally just want to do it for the people that want to do it. But I didn't meet the target, so that never got created. But yeah, that's the kind of app story. It's just a lot of, unless you're a coder yourself, it's a lot of time and effort to get a good app out there.
And is that why you kind of stopped developing apps? Because you kind of thought, this is so much time and effort and I could be focusing on other things that would be...
Yeah, there was a time when I was having so many app ideas. So I had a list of ideas of things I wanted to produce, but just didn't know a coder who had the space to put the time and effort into doing them. So I just worked on them one at a time, and by the end of after AR Mind Reader, did Sure Thumper. There was some clever stuff going on with that, but it was easier to produce than AR Mind Reader. But yeah, then he got another job, so he was really busy again. So it's like starting from fresh, and financially it wasn't that lucrative. So yeah, it's just a matter of where you put your focus.
And Card Now is still available, and Show Thumper is still available, right?
Yeah,
you can get those.
Sure. I'm not sure about Show Thumper actually. I think Card Now is definitely available. Yeah,
and it's great. Just go on the App Store and search Card Now. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, that's really cool. So let's talk a little bit about the business side of things, because obviously, you are a very successful business person. You know as well as me that a lot of magicians that become professional magicians do tend to struggle quite a bit. And one of the things that you do, and we can talk about this if you'd like to, is you mentor other magicians and you offer advice and guidance to other magicians on a variety, depending on the level of the magician and where they are, you can offer advice and guidance. So if somebody's like brand new, you can be talking about how to get gigs. If somebody's been around the block for a while, you can talk about, focus and so on and so forth. And I've been a big, and I'll tell everyone now, I've never mentioned this before on the channel, but I'm a big advocate of having mentors, and I've got several mentors. I've got several paid mentors, Brad Burton, Cross Crosley, a whole bunch of different people. But I actually pay you to be my mentor as well, because you're a really smart business person and the advice you give me is incredible. And it's one of the reasons that I wanted to get you on the channel. Because there are a lot of magicians that struggle with business and they don't know how to get ahead. And I know from speaking to, I know from personal experience, but I know from also speaking to so many other magicians that you work with, that you've been a huge help to them as well. So have you got any advice? I mean, on how to be successful? Because a lot of magicians, like I say, they do kind of struggle and, they kind of make ends meet, but they never kind of are able to get to where they want to be, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so you've really got to decide to put the time and effort in. I remember, it's like we were talking about earlier, it's kind of easy to say that you're a professional magician if you're single and living at home, but it's a different ball game when you've got the kids and the mortgage. So I used to think of myself as a creative magician. So one of the best jobs I ever had was being a magic consultant for Ali Cook, and we kind of brainstormed crazy ideas, and then it was my job to kind of invent the methods. That's like a dream job for any magician. So I used to consider myself very creative in terms of magic, and literally just made the decision to, I'm just going to start doing, who needs more tricks? I've got enough magic. I'm just going to keep performing this stuff and put my creativity into the marketing. So I literally just tried to make that switch and joined, you heard of the Entrepreneur Circle with,
Nigel Bottrell. He's based in Birmingham. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And yeah, that was life changing. That literally, one of the biggest things that changed it for me was him saying, so if you're a plumber, when you're as soon as you're self-employed as a plumber, your job is no longer the plumbing. Your job is the marketing of your service. And I hated that when I first heard it. It's like, no, I'm a magician. I don't want to be a bloody marketer. But he was just so right. It's like that there is no business unless there's customers, and customers come from marketing and sales. And I hated marketing and sales, but you've just got to, there is no business without that. There's a very nice hobby, and there's a very nice sideline, but there's no business without those things.
I agree. Absolutely. 100%. And can we talk a little bit about branding? Because obviously you've made a very interesting, a lot of the advice, and you know, I love marketing as well. One of the advice that a lot of marketers will give you is you sell yourself. You don't sell, you are the product. So it's you that you sell. And you branded yourself as Ginger Magic. So not Damon Sir, you branded yourself as Ginger Magic, which is very interesting, and it goes against a lot of advice. And I did the same thing with Slightly Unusual, not Craig Betty. Any advice on branding and why you actually went down the route of going Ginger Magic as opposed to, you know, going full on DamienSir.com, you know? Yeah.
I don't think I was trying to be very clever about that. It was literally, so when I used to do the, friend, really good friend of mine, she started calling me Ginger Magic, and it kind of stuck with lots of our friends. So people would say they'd Ginger rather than Damien. And so when I started doing the ski seasons in France, I can't speak French at all. I spent a lot of time out there, but I can't speak French in the slightest. So I'd do magic for people, and then they, whenever I'd walk into like the restaurant, the staff there would be like, Ginger Magic, because they couldn't speak English, I couldn't speak, but that would be the thing that stuck. So it was literally just a simplicity thing, like who's going to remember, you know yourself, if you, well, how many times have we heard this story? Oh, I saw a magician at blah blah blah, he was amazing. Oh right, what was his name? No, so no one, I think, is ever going to remember Damien Sir, but people do remember Ginger Magic, and it was that simple. It's like, which one are people going to remember? So it was a weird one, because I felt a bit uncomfortable with it, and asked lots of friends, and I got mixed reviews. I got some people thought it was a good idea to do the Ginger Magic thing. Others were really like, oh no, don't do that. That sounds cheap or weird, but I kind of just went for it, and I'm really pleased that I did. It's people remember it way more than my name.
Absolutely. So what advice would you give somebody that's watching this that wants to become more successful within their field, other than contacting you and arranging for you to be a mentor to them? Because obviously that's a great way of doing it, and we're going to put your details down below as to how people can do that. But outside of that, is there, you know, if you had to give somebody one or two tips that they could incorporate right now to achieve more success? I know it's difficult because different people are at different positions and different levels, and there's different challenges with different, but is there any advice that you can offer that kind of works across the board?
Yeah, so I like you say, everyone's different. So I think you just need to try lots of different stuff, and most things either involve time or money or both, and you're on that balancing act. So you can either spend a lot of money to do marketing, or you can invest loads of time to do marketing, or find a balance between the two. But if you've not tried things, you just need to try things. So there's business networking breakfasts. I tried those, hated them, but some magicians love them, and that's where they get loads of work. So I'm really, one of the biggest things that I tell people with the mentoring is just do what you enjoy. Because if you talk to someone who's fantastic at networking and they get all their work from networking, so you think, right, I'll do networking, and you hate it, you're just going to, even if you get some success from that, you're going to hate the process, and life's too short. So if you, like, I've never used TikTok. Some people are going to be successful on TikTok. If you're doing that and it's working, then great. If you're doing that and hating it, but you're getting a bit of success, you're probably not going to get much more success because you're hating it. So just try everything. Try wedding fairs, try Facebook ads, Google ads, just try stuff. And the ones that, if something's really successful, then obviously see if you can bear doing it. If it depends how much you like it. If there's one that you just really like and you enjoy and you're getting stuff back from, then hone in on that one. Have as many pillars as you can and try lots of different things, but then do the ones that you enjoy, basically, would be my tip.
That's really good advice. That's great advice. And on the subject of business, you've set up you've set up a Facebook group, which is well worth people joining, and it's specifically for magicians in business. Is that right?
Yeah, so there was a Magic Gig Share group that was for sharing gigs, and sort of people started using that as a bit of a chat group, which other people used to find annoying because they wanted it to just be about the gigs. So I started another one called Magicians Talk Business, just to get all the chat out of that one, because there's loads of magic chat groups on Facebook, but I wasn't aware of another one that was just about the business side of it. So yeah, there's those two groups.
Okay. And I've mentioned obviously a couple of times that you do mentor magicians. Can we talk a couple of minutes about that? Because I know there's going to be people watching this that are thinking, you know, maybe that's something I can do. Maybe that's what I need. Because people do, and again, I can't stress this enough. You do need someone to help you. No matter how successful you are, you do need someone to help you, whatever that may be. You know, a professional footballer that's the greatest footballer in the world is still going to have a coach that works with them every single day. You know, you're the greatest. I remember when Tiger Woods was everywhere and the greatest golfer of all time, he has several coaches. Like, you know, everyone has help. Like, look at Dynamo, the most successful magician of the modern era. How many consultants and people helping him does he have behind the scenes? You know, I think having a mentor, especially in business, is really important, especially when it comes to magic. So how do people know that they're the right person for you, and how can they contact you, and what does that process involve if they want to find out more?
Probably the quickest way would be to join the Magicians Talk Business group and just look at some of the person there, and if the way that I approach this stuff sounds like a good fit, then give it a try. So I'm completely not one of these 10x type people.
Grant Cardone.
Yeah, 10 times your effort, 10 times the success. I just get tired listening to them. It's like I'm much more the 4-hour work week, Tim Ferriss, 80-20 type stuff, just making life simple and enjoying it. But there's nothing wrong with the 10x guys. That if you're a go and get it tiger, then you'll that's what you want. So find one of those guys and do that. Find out who's a good match for you, basically.
And how can people reach out to you? Is there an email address that I can put in the bottom of the screen or something?
Best way is probably by Facebook, to be honest. I don't use much social media, but I do Facebook. Damien Sor on Facebook or in either of those two groups. I want not the Magic Gig Share, because that's not a chat group, but the Magicians Talk Business is more chat.
And it's interesting what you said there, that you're not into social media, and I know you're not. You know, you have magicians that say, oh, you can't be successful without having huge social media platforms. But I suppose that goes back to what you were saying earlier, which is do the stuff you enjoy doing. Just because having a big social media presence works for one type of magician, it might not work for somebody else. Something, you know, you might find something completely different that will work for you.
Yeah.
So,
yes, I've just gotten, when obviously things moved on to Instagram and stuff now, but when everything was Twitter, as any business person, you've kind of got this, I need to be doing Twitter, everything's going Twitter. So I'd kind of make myself do a bit of Twitter, but it was just unpleasant. Why do I want to spend my time in this place when I'm not enjoying it? I had the same, so with back in the teenage years, when I was just obsessed with the slights, I never felt like I was practicing. That was just kind of play. Whereas a friend of mine's stunning on guitar, so good on guitar that I bought a guitar and I wanted to learn guitar. But every time I picked up the bloody thing, it just felt like I was practicing. Like I had to get past this. I've got to put the hours in to get anywhere. And whereas I assume he felt with a guitar in his hand the way that I felt with a deck of cards in my hand. So just find your thing. There's no point trying to be someone else's thing. If you don't like social media, then don't spend time in it. But if you love it, you're going to get successful.
It's so true. Like, I can't stand doing wedding fairs. I just can't stand them. I can't stand standing there all day. I just hate it. But I know people like Owen Strickland gets a ridiculous amount of work from wedding fairs. It works for him. It won't work for me because I'll just stand there looking bored. I'm not going to be a good representative of my company if I'm going out doing wedding fairs every day. So it's the same sort of thing, really, I suppose.
I'm exactly the same. I'm always surprised when you hear about the Otis Stricklands of the world or the really successful magicians who are still doing wedding fairs, and I'm like, but they're so successful at it. It's like that is where they get the gigs. Whereas I stopped doing them years ago. I just cannot be asked I got better and better at them, but even then it was you'd kind of spend all day on a Sunday to get 15 leads that might turn into two gigs, and I'm like, I'd rather sit on my ass and let Google bring me some leads. This is not for me.
Yeah, I totally agree with you 100%. But it works for some people.
Absolutely, it's like the breakfast networking. I'd rather put forks in my eyes. But if you're doing it and you're getting results from it and you enjoy it, then you're doing the right thing.
And I think it's about constantly re-looking, because something might work for you at one period of your life, but it might not. Like, so I did business networking for a long time. When I first started my business, it was a great way to get me out there and get people seeing what I was doing and so on and so forth. But I got to the point where it was kind of like becoming a bit of a chore. Every week I'm going to have to get up at 5 o'clock to go to this thing. And it was kind of like I was getting these referrals coming through, and it was like, I've had twice as many through Google. Like, why am I getting up at the crack of dawn to get these things? And it got to a point, and I said, right, okay, I'm going to have to knock it on the head. Like, I'm not wedding fairs on the head. And I suppose it's all about, just because something works for you, it doesn't always continue to work for you, and you have to constantly monitor. And I suppose that's the other thing that a lot of magicians don't do, tracking where things come from. And I know you're big into that sort of thing, but you know, it's like, I speak to so many magicians and I'm like, how many inquiries did you get last week? I don't know. How many times did you not write it down? No. What do you do when the phone rang? Oh, I just answer them and tell them the price. Do you monitor it? No, if they ring back, then book the ring back and book. And I'm like, what? Yeah, I suppose tracking everything and knowing what's going to continue to work and not work is so vitally important, isn't it?
Yeah. And that just reminded me of another one. If we had some car stuff going on recently, and if you try and contact, it's almost unusual these days to just have a normal level of service. So like if you phone someone, you want someone to either answer the phone or get back the answer phone message with a reasonable amount of time. But 90% of I'm plucking numbers out of the air, but a high percentage of businesses just really fall short of that hurdle, just the basic customer service. Mm-hmm. So if you're a magician, one of the biggest things you can do is just reply to the email. Don't leave it 3 days in your inbox. If someone's phoned you, phone them back or answer the phone. But I get so many inquiries from people who say, oh, I've inquired with 3 or 4 magicians, but they've not got back to me yet. What's wrong with people? What have you got that's more important than a customer if you've got a business?
Exactly. 100%. You mentioned Nigel Bottle earlier. He refers to this as the customer journey.
Yeah.
I think he was the first person to coin the phrase of the customer journey, and looking at the journey that the customer goes through from initial, you know, the initial advert, whatever it is that found you, all the way through the process of the inquiry, the phone call, booking, after sales, customer service, that whole process.
Yeah.
You know, having that customer journey, make it so good that customer wants to come back to you in the future because they've just had an incredible level of service.
Yeah. And there's a really nice way of, so once you, if you can break down that customer journey, In terms of marketing, something, this is something else that Nigel used to say. So if someone has made an inquiry with you, for example, if your next stage of that journey is to have a phone call, then your marketing at that point shouldn't be "book Damien." It should be "this is why you should make the call." You're just marketing the next step. You're not trying to market the end goal. But yeah, here's some really nice ideas.
Oh yeah, that's really important and something that a lot of magicians don't think of. I completely agree with you. And I suppose one way to make things more organized is to have some sort of automated system. Like I use Keep or Infusionsoft, whatever they call themselves these days. I know you have various different platforms that you use. Gigio is another thing that a lot of magicians use. How important is it to have some sort of platform that allows you to take the stress out of it? So you're not using a paper diary, writing it in, you know, but you've got a level of automation with booking contracts and this and that and the other.
Yeah. So again, it's down to the individual. So I absolutely know successful magicians who are still kind of back of the envelope type guys. And if that's the type of person you are, then that's cool. I'm way more on the geek side of things and the 80-20. I want to spend as little of my time as possible with people who aren't going to book me. And most people who inquire with me are not going to book me. So I try to automate as much of those systems as I can. So for example, if someone inquires with me, I can see that they've inquired, but my system doesn't even tell me that they exist until they've got to the next step of making a phone call, because I'm just not interested in them until that step, and everything until that step is marketing to that step. And then once I have spoken to someone, you want to be following up with them, but you don't want to be, as soon as you've got more than five people to follow up with, it becomes a very arduous task to do that manually. So automate it. The systems are out there, and they cost a few hundred pounds a year for a decent one, but it's so worth the time.
So, and it's all about investing in your business and focusing on your business and treating it like a business, you know, show business. Don't worry so much about the show, but worry about the business as well.
Yeah.
Here's a question. Do you still, you know, you mentioned about how you realized that you got enough tricks and so you wanted to focus on the marketing, and that's what you've done and that's what you've continued to do, and that's one of the reasons you've become so successful in a very crowded marketplace. Do you still take that approach? Are you still doing the same tricks that you did 15 years ago? Or is magic still a hobby for you? Do you still buy tricks? And because the reason I ask this is because I've noticed, especially over lockdown, a lot of magicians I don't want to say lost interest, but they've kind of almost fallen out of love with magic. It's kind of, I go to pick up a pack of cards to practice and I can't be bothered. I've bought a new trick, but I haven't even took it out of the packaging yet. I've got this new download, but I can't even be bothered to watch it. And a lot of people have kind of, something that's a hobby, they've almost fallen out of love with it, especially people that do it as a living. I don't know. I suppose the question I'm asking is, do you still have it as a hobby? Because you talked about how you wanted to do a hobby as a job. Is it still a hobby for you? Do you still buy tricks? And did you lose interest during the pandemic? And if so, what did you do to kind of overcome that?
Yeah, so in terms of the buying tricks side of it, I really rarely buy tricks. I go to Blackpool every year, unless I'm doing some sort of ski trip or something. But so there's been a few conventions now where I've been to Blackpool for 3 days and come back, and I've literally only bought a deck of cards, because I've got this mental thing in my head now where so it's like kind of a three-step process. Am I going to use it? No. Am I really going to use it? And all right, then, which pocket is it going in? And most things fall at two or three. So I really rarely buy new tricks, but it's completely still a hobby. There's nothing that I like more than watching something. It's why the Foolers thing is such a nice format. I just love it when I see something and I've got a clue how the hell that works. And the last thing I want to know at that point is how it's done. I love that feeling of being fried and trying to deconstruct a method for it. In terms of the lockdown, I was a bit, is worried the right word? So during lockdown, I can remember seeing loads of entertainers typing on Facebook how much they were missing the performing and this side of this stuff. And I was thinking like, I'm fine. I didn't have this need to be performing. So I was a little bit concerned, like, do I still love this? Should I go back to it? But then literally one or two gigs in, it's like, oh, this is great. But I didn't have that drive where I needed to be doing it. But yeah, so it's absolutely still a hobby. And going back to the magic shop in Sheffield, seeing all my friends in Blackpool, they're the highlights of my year. I'm not churning through tricks. Last time I saw David Williamson, I joked to him, I've literally done ring on rope at every table that I've ever been to since I was kind of 18. I did the same things for years and years and years.
Excellent. Absolutely cool. Brilliant stuff. Okay. I've got one more question in a second, but let me ask you one more thing about business and then we'll wrap this up. So one more question about business. Obviously, we're just coming out of the pandemic. Over here in the UK, things feel like they're getting back to normal. Obviously, there's kind of a question mark about the winter months. Around the world, different countries are experiencing different things, but we're trying to move past the whole COVID thing. And I don't want to make this about the pandemic. My question is, with what you're seeing from your own personal magic business, is now a good time for somebody who's an amateur or hobbyist to go full time? Or do you think there's still a level of and they should wait for a period of time? Because that's a question that comes up a lot.
Yeah. It's going to really depend on your circumstances. So do you know a magician, Sheffield magician called Andy Taylor?
I
think he's one of the best magicians in the country. I've always loved the guy. He's amazing. And he's literally just gone pro a couple of weeks ago. I've been wanting to go pro for years. So when I first saw that, it's like, oh, this is brilliant. And my follow-up thought was, shit, what if we go into lockdown again? And he's just gone for it. But you kind of can't live like that, can you? If everything goes to shit, just make it all right on the other side. there's never going to be a moment where, oh, this is sorted. I've not had a problem for 3 years. Let's do it now. That if you're waiting for that moment, it's just never going to happen. So if you've got the itch, you've either got to scratch it or stop doing your head in and just be honest with yourself. You're never going to do it. And both of those options are fine. The least fine option is always wanting to do it and never trying it. It's fine to just think this is a hobby and I don't actually want to do it. There's no problem with that, is there? It's just do what's right for you.
That's great. Really good advice. Final question. What's next for you, David? You've achieved so much. I mean, just the fact of being a very successful, busy working magician, commanding really good fees is an incredible achievement in its own right, but you've done an awful lot as well. Is there anything left on your magical bucket list that you haven't achieved that you'd like to do? I know you're a big fan of the, you know, limiting the amount of work that you do and not having to like go crazy 24/7, which is absolutely fine. But is there anything like anything either magic or business related? Are we thinking Damon's wanting to, you know, compete at the Magic Circle Close-Up Competition or enter FISM what is it that you're wanting to achieve over the coming weeks, months, years? Anything?
I've never been a big, which sounds odd for someone who kind of tries to help other people reach goals and stuff. I've never been a big goals type person. I just love doing stuff that I enjoy and trying to put my focus into enjoying the moment that you're in. So in terms of magically, there's no big overriding goal. I've never had any interest in stage. So sometimes I feel like I should be trying to do stage stuff, but the idea doesn't feel appealing. It just feels like I have something that I should do, or there might be more money in that. So I should, but it's all should rather than want. So stage doesn't really do it for me. I'd quite like to, so I do parlor shows and I'm getting better and better at those. So it would be nice. I can feel that I'm getting close to it. So with the parlor shows, with close-up magic, I realized a few years ago, I'm kind of in this place where, wow, I never thought I'd get here. I've just got this. It's like there's nothing that can happen in this environment that I'm just not going to be all right with. It's just like this is, I've got this. When I started doing parlor shows, for the first few years, I'd be really nervous for the week before them. And now it's more just like, oh, I'm doing another one. And I can feel that I'm getting close to that point of, oh shit, I've got this now. I can just go anywhere and do this. So that's going to be a nice step that I can feel is kind of on the horizon. But yeah, there's no big overarching goal that I'm aiming for. I just want to be happy, enjoy the kids, and look in the garden.
Perfect. Living the dream, especially out there in the middle of nowhere in Somerset.
Yeah, yeah.
Damon, this has been an incredible interview. Like I say, you know, for people that are watching this, we've been trying to set this up now since the middle of lockdown. Like, we've been trying to set this up, and our schedules haven't meshed. So the fact that I've been able to get you on here is amazing. So thank you so much, Damon.
Well, what I was most looking forward to is when you write your little blurbs about who you've interviewed in, who the interview's about. You're a master of this. You always write it like, this is the best interview I've ever done. And I was just thinking, what the hell are you going to write about mine? It's like, oh, and now I'm talking to Damien. All the people in your channel, and this one's Damien.
No, mate, I, as I say, I pay for you to be my mentor. That's how much respect I have for you. I think that you're amazing, and you have helped so many people in the UK achieve more success. And just that, if you never achieved anything else, it makes you more than worthy of being on Magic TV. And you are also one of the nicest people in magic. I've never heard you say a bad thing about anybody, which is incredible as well. So yeah, you're a great guy, and I want people to reach out to you. You've got, obviously you can join Damon's group on Facebook if you want to talk more business. It's Facebook group Magicians Talk Business, I believe it is.
Yeah.
You also have the gig sharing group. So if you're in the UK, there's a gig sharing group where people can pass gigs to each other. It's still the premium group on Facebook. And then obviously you can connect with Damon. If you want to speak to him about being a mentor, the best thing to do is reach out to you on Facebook, send you a message request, and you'll get back to them. Is that right?
Yeah, sure, yeah.
Amazing. And if you haven't already done so, and you're an Apple user, and if you're not an Apple user and you're a magician, have a quiet word with yourself. If you're an Apple user, go onto the App Store, search Card Now, because it's very, very old and you probably haven't seen it, but it's absolutely amazing. And it's a great way to print your business card out of your phone, and you'll get killer reactions, trust me. So yeah, go check that out. And Damon, one more time, thank you so much, my friend.
Cheers, Craig. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Guys, don't forget to like and subscribe and do all that fun stuff. I'm going to be back tomorrow with three videos, I think. One at 9, one at 2, one at 6, something like that. So make sure that you keep checking out Magic TV. Go take out Damon, and I will be back again tomorrow with another Magic video. I'll see you then. My name's Craig from Magic.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic, magic.
Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel.
Magic TV.
Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV. Or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.